Good teachers.
Blog Talk Radio.
No disrespect to Eddie.
Right.
What I see honestly is
Maybe that it's so deep with Vince, you know, that he didn't want to profit off of Savage's death by drawing ticket sales to Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So I mean, that was so good.
Now, don't get me wrong. They announced it when they did for ticket sales for the Hall of Fame. But the gesture in general is there and reigns. But, yeah, so Savage legitimizes the Hall of Fame. But that's what our episode is going to be primarily about. We're going to talk dip in and out of a macho man voice. All
in
night.
And out.
Yeah. In and out. Oh, yeah. Freaked out. Oh. But it's going to be a good time.
And you should have drank that coffee this morning.
Oh, yeah, dude. So I have that Macho Man stuff going all show. We're going to talk about our favorite moments. We're also going to talk about the controversy about Hogan and Savage. Hogan inducting Savage in their well-known beef. But we're going to get into that later in the show. Drew, hold your breath. We're going to go over some of the news first. And we're also going to get Drew's weekly take on total nonstop action.
This is the thing, though.
This is the thing now, by the way, because we initially, for our longtime listeners, of course you know this, but for our new listeners, I imposed a ban on Drew talking about TNA / Impact Wrestling on the air, especially any length, because if he talks about it for more than, I don't know, 1 second, maybe seconds, it inevitably turns quite negative. But from feedback from you guys...
Irrationally negative.
Irrationally negative. I'm glad you're the one to bring that up.
I can't help it. I can't help it.
It just flows out of him like...
As soon as I say the letters T... am I going to say it right now?
The hate spews from this man like lava from an overflowing volcano. And we're going to turn him loose on TNA again this week because, frankly, you guys like it and I've grown accustomed to it. So we'll get him there. But all kinds of fun stuff here on the show, Drew. But first, I want to start off talking about something. We usually don't talk about it to the end of the show, but I want to get him right in the beginning. Hey, Drew, what are you doing March 7th, 2015? You going to be anywhere near Castle Shannon, PA?
I think it's some important book. I think it's called GPW.
GPW, Generations of Pro Wrestling. Having a show, March 7th. Be there, $15, get you an all-admission ticket in the door to be a part of some great family-friendly but top-notch exciting pro wrestling supporting local independent wrestling. So that's Generations of Pro Wrestling. We've had the world champion, Rob Wilds, on here. We've had Serafini, who's a GPW wrestler. She is... I guess you could say petitioning to be added to the Pennsylvania Championship match, the three-way that they're having on March 7th, or reported to have, and she wants to be added. So we got all kind of drama, but we want to let you know that we're going to be there. It's official now. We'll be in the building there live on March 7th, so we want you to come on down and join us as we watch some awesome wrestling fun.
It'll be fun. It'll be a good time.
Are you stoked for that, Drew?
I am. I'm always stoked to watch local wrestling.
I mean, I think independent wrestling is where the stars of tomorrow are born. And it's where the stars of today and yesterday come to really give something back to the fans. And I think that's what you're going to see at GPW. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, and I wouldn't go as far to say that all the stars that you've seen and do see have started there. But, I mean, all the great legends that we know have started in some form of independent wrestling. You know,
even territory days, independent
days. That's what happened. John Cena did not.
I mean, no.
Just emphasize that. But
Dixie Carter, did she?
Wasn't TNA considered independent?
I think it was for a minute.
But before she was involved.
But it debuted on pay-per-view, so could it ever truly be an independent company?
Mm-hmm.
What's independent, though? Is it just independent of WWE? You know what? We want your definition of what is independent wrestling. Where does that independent word come from? What is your opinion? Do you have a historical significance? But this is an interactive show, and we want you to tell us. So call into the show now, 602-753-1764. That's the call-in number. I'll say it again because I like to hear myself talk. 602-753-1764, or join us live in the chat where we are being moderated by our wonderful producer. He has been here for 6 weeks. It's a freaking record here, people.
2 weeks was a record.
2 weeks was the previous record, and he smashed it. He's still going strong, so we have him at a Kevin Nash to his Goldberg. Ladies, Melvin, how you doing back there? Melvin, our producer. Yes!
I know, dude! I know! Oh, it's so good to be here. It's so good to be here. Thank you. Melvin.
All right. There's a time and a place for everything. I know. But right now, right here, is not that place for this kind of conversation. I know where you're going with this. Melvin, we're on the air. You know this. All right, you put me on the spot. I'm not going to tell you.
Dude.
I'm not going to tell you.
No, I'm not going to tell him.
What is he saying, dude? What does he want me to know?
Melvin, I'm sorry that I understand you, bro. Dude, I'm sorry, but it's just not, it's just, I don't know. Maybe it's me.
So you started out saying how he was so happy to be here.
I know what you said. You don't have to tell me that I know that was right. I know.
All right. He's really happy to be here.
Right.
He also said that, you know, he's stoked to be the longest running producer of this show ever and possibly could be of all time. You know, he could get fired today. I don't think we'd ever find somebody to last this
long. I don't know. We'll never know until we try it. But I'm not, you know, depending on where this conversation goes will determine how interested I am in looking.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but me and Melvin are pretty good friends.
I have gathered from your frequent conversations.
He doesn't spend my money.
He doesn't spend his money. It's money to spend.
All right, but yes,
spend
our money.
We're moving on. We're moving on. Keep going.
So, we have a good time, me and Melvin. Melvin takes care of me. I take care of him. And what he just said was that he thought that I looked wonderful. He thought that I looked wonderful and that the outlined protrusion in my pants looked even better.
What?
I think there's something going on with Melvin here. I think he's sarcastic. I think he doesn't mean what he's saying. Right, Melvin?
What?
All right, cool. So just so we know, Melvin does not seriously have a man crush on me. But we do a lot of partying, man. Me and Melvin, we party it up. We have ourselves a good old time.
Okay, so I'm just going to get this absolutely correct. So what you're saying is that that whole conversation just now, just to wrap it up, this is about the Macho Man today. Just to wrap it up real quick, that whole conversation was about Melvin commenting on the protrusion of your pants and your reaction to it.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, there you have it, folks. I don't know about you, but call me and tell me if you can hear that, too, because Melvin is weird. Well, you know, hey, we're going to be getting firing right into the day, the news of the week, and then get right into the show, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. Be a part of that. Hey, we're going to continue that partnership that we got going on with Fernando, I guess, is the cool idea. So we'll be right back. It's Ringside View, Melvin. It's Fernando's Stop. We'll be back. News and then more Macho Man. Coming up.
Hello. Fernando here again to tell you about the latest and greatest of the services brought to you by my company, the Escuela Preparation Company. We have now realized what you, the consumer, most crave in an apocalyptic scenario. You crave companionship. You crave someone to hold you, someone to care for you, someone to keep you warm, someone to keep you this safe. Now, Escuela Preparation Company is very proud to bring to you this very service. A service we have titled Fernando, for now and for eternity. With Fernando for now and for eternity, you can request that Fernando, a man who was once a boy from the small village of Pedos Mejivos, come to your home and spend the night with you. We may eat, we may laugh, we may talk, we may find our bodies intertwined, positions unknown, minds lost into the dark abyss of the love where you begin and where Fernando ends, no one may ever truly know. With Fernando, from here, for now, and for eternity, Fernando may be with you for the night. And if it should happen that the apocalypse or the end of days would occur, while Fernando has you wrapped in a strong yet gentle embrace, then Fernando will be yours for eternity. What could be more appealing than finding yourself wrapped, held, needing, wanting Fernando, needing Fernando, seeing Fernando with your eyes, kissing him with your lips, again seeing him with your eyes, needing him with all of your heart, all of your mind, and all of your very soul, to wake up every day and to need Fernando. That is what Fernando and the Escuela Preparation Company are ready to do for you. So when it is dark, when you are cold, when you feel lonely, call on Fernando, and you may just get lucky, and Fernando may be your Fernando forever.
Our lovely Asian cleaning crew brought us some nice bagels. I want to thank them for that. That was awesome, guys.
That was very nice and not racist at all, Drew.
No, not at all. Yes. They are Asian and they are cleaning.
Yes.
What was racist about that?
The egg roll part.
They literally brought us egg rolls. I'm eating them right now.
Not mentioning it. I don't know.
If anything, they're stereotyping themselves.
Oh, easy there, winger. Easy. Right into that. Did InfoWars tell you to say that?
No, that's my Tosh.0
comment. Okay, there you go. Okay, that's why. Well, welcome back to Ringside View, Fernando, huh? These commercials, I think we might just hold off on some Fernando for
a while.
That
guy freaks me out.
He may be paying one of our co-sponsors, but he's not paying us enough for me to spend 3 minutes long, that was, and he basically just offered to have sex with anyone who would pay him. I'm out. Sure, that one's completely legal.
I told you he doesn't sell anything, dude.
He does. I thought he did.
He's a prostitute.
I saw the brochure. So, it's, you know, what? It's legitimate. Completely legitimate. Or not at all, apparently. I don't know. We're not going to play him anymore. That's the point. So, we are feeling some macho man here today. But before we are getting into that, we are going to talk about the news of the day, news of the week, interesting things that have popped up. You know, interesting news week. So Daniel Bryan returned to action this week. As of the recording, it happened, but it hasn't aired. So she goes to SmackDown, and he's not only in one, but he's in two matches on SmackDown. First, his return match is against Kane, which was smart booking. Bring him against the guy who put him in, put him away, you know, kayfabe-wise. So that makes sense, but after Kane, they end up doing a six-man tag with Ambrose, Reigns, and Bryan versus...
They may have been. Nobody really knows how...
Well, it's just wear and tear. It was wear and tear.
But I just want to say, I find it funny how for the reason his neck broke, and I'm going to just... I think we all can tell if you've been watching wrestling in the last year and a half, is because the guy was wrestling two matches a night for like 8 months.
8 months anyway. That's really what he does. He was two matches a night.
I mean, like, so, like, then his neck goes bad. So then he takes a very long break, has nerve damage, you know, the chances of him returning are starting to dwindle, and all of a sudden comes back, and they're putting him in two matches in that again, with Kane being one of them. It's just like, really?
Yeah, it's just like,
right, you know, are they punking them?
So Kane's working, Kane and Daniel Bryan are back to working two matches on the same card again. It's just like, oh my God, it's Raw 2011 all over again. But it's, you know, hey, it's, it works because they're immediately the most interesting segments. I mean, who wouldn't want to see a six-man tag with Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, and Daniel Bryan team up to take on Seth Rollins, the Big Show, and Kane? Hell yeah!
Can I replace a couple of those people?
Oh, you can't because it already happened. But it airs on SmackDown. But it is the official in-ring return of Daniel Bryan, somebody whose return we questioned.
Does he win the match against Kane?
Oh, yeah, they win. I'm not sure he gets the pin, but they win.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
if you're going to watch SmackDown.
Dude, if you're listening to this match, and you're the kind of person who is listening to this podcast, rather, and haven't read the SmackDown spoilers, well, then you're a rare breed, my friend.
In fact, did not read the SmackDown spoilers this week, obviously.
But you host the show.
Yeah.
So. Well, our listeners are completely used to the fact that we'll talk about something that everybody has seen and talked about except you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's an honest reaction sometimes.
Do want to talk about some news that has popped through. With Kurt Angle going back to the fucking place that I can't stand.
Oh, right. Are we there?
Not quite yet.
We're not on the other place.
Yeah, again, I mean, yeah.
Easy, dude. God, two for two on. We're not going to have any.
Anyway, so, Kurt Angle, pretty sure he's going to be back because he couldn't get in with WWE at the moment, so he's bored. Why not, right? I mean, if you're sitting around doing nothing and you're one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Then, I mean, what do? You keep wrestling. You ain't going to get a Ring of Honor. You know what I mean? I guess you could.
Oh, God, they tear him up, but God, he'd hurt himself.
Yeah, would they pay him?
There's no limit.
You know what I mean? Like, that's another thing. Like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure TNA's probably not even paying him that
much. I may make a statement. I believe that if Kurt Angle went to any other place but WWE, this statement is extremely true. In TNA, I believe it is true as well. But there's nobody to tell Kurt Angle no. Outside of Vince McMahon or maybe a Jim Ross or somebody, even if they're not Vince McMahon, there's nobody to tell Kurt Angle no. Don't go there and do that to yourself. Don't go out there and do that with somebody else. You know, there's nobody. So the man is an amazing wrestler. He is a true legend. Pittsburgh hero, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
There's no one to tell him no, so he's going to keep going until something happens. Or, heaven forbid, if that's what that goes on. Or until someone steps in and does it for him.
Right.
Can't do it anymore.
To go where I'm going with this. Pause that for a second. He's back. But regardless of that, on Monday Night Raw, Paul Heyman releases a promo and says that, you know, Brock Lesnar won the NCAA.
Oh, the infamous internet promo,
NCAA World Heavyweight Championship for wrestling, collegial wrestling. Also won the UFC Heavyweight Champion and is WWE Champion. And Paul Heyman states that nobody has ever done two of those things, let alone three. Right.
Which is what Brock Lesnar has done, presumably.
Which is what Brock Lesnar has done. And which is a very, just for any person in the video, just get one of those. It's awesome. To get two of those, wow, you're a legend. To get three of those, you're an icon. You know, that's how it works. Now, Kurt Angle tweets a response to that promo. Did you hear this response?
I read the tweet.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, Kurt Angle said, Paul Heyman, do your research before you speak. He said, NCAA Heavyweight Collegial Wrestling Championship, check. WWE Championship, check. He said, that's two out of three. Oh, and did we forget about the Olympic gold medal? Brock Lesnar ain't gotten any of those.
Yeah.
So, but what surprises me the most about this reaction from Kurt Angle is that he's paying attention.
Yeah, well, he's watching Raw.
Yeah, he is watching Raw. This came out that night.
Yeah.
So he knew it happened, when it happened. So it's like Kurt Angle is itching to get back to the WWE. Did he sign a prolonged contract with TNA?
Probably a year.
How much did it cost to buy out of that contract?
Enough to do it. Enough not to do it. How much do you think
that contract
is? With all due respect to Kurt Angle, and all due respect to Kurt Angle fans, if you think that Kurt Angle not wanting to go back to WWE was a problem there, you're wrong. Kurt Angle has a serious history of drug and violence-related issues. I mean, two years ago, they pulled him over. I mean, we live in Pittsburgh. We hear about this perhaps just a little bit more than everybody else. But it seemed like once a year, once every 2 years tops, for a good six-year bulk there, Kurt Angle was getting pulled over for a DUI or when someone reported Kurt Angle driving drunk in his girlfriend's house, and he literally had a mouthful of pills. And I'm saying the guy is clean now, and, you know, bless him. I hope the best for him. Stay true. But that's got to be a big factor. The WWE, I mean, look, Kevin Nash got in a fight with his son, and a lot of accounts had Kevin Nash in the right in this instance.
Scott Hall?
Kevin Nash. Uh-huh. Scott Hall, the son, stepped in.
Uh-huh. Right.
Kevin Nash, did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, okay, so we're going to go on a news break thing, but I'll go into it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, but basically what happens here at the end of the story, I'll spoil it for Drew, everyone else should know this, is that Nash gets suspended and pulled from Monday Night Raw, right?
Okay.
Because he had a domestic violence issue over the holiday week. So somebody with Kurt Angle's issue, they don't want to have a full active roster, someone do that again. And to put Kurt Angle on the road is dangerous for him in his rehab, much less his body. So there's a lot of issues there not to go with it. So
look at the WWE books, all those old heads now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's the same WWE. So when they're sitting there going, could we have Kurt Angle go on the road? I mean, sure, you can attempt that, but you don't need to.
No.
You don't need to.
He should be a TV guy. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, the bread and butter of Kurt Angle is the wrestling matches. So what you do is treat him like Brock Lesnar, have him appear on TV more in segments. But treat him like Brock Lesnar and where his match is the main event, period. So you can have him wrestle on Raw and make it special.
I'm just saying, dude, but I think he just said it. I think that had he not signed with TNA, that tweet right in itself sparked my interest in
right
Kurt
there.
Angle,
Brock Lesnar
match.
WrestleMania rematch. Yeah. Well, absolutely. Quick point I want to make very quickly about this is that whatever Kurt Angle did, it's too late now because he signed a new contract, but if I could reach out to Kurt Angle, I would say that whatever they offer you next year when you go back to them being referring to WWE, take it, dude. Because I guarantee right now, AJ Styles, when he did not take that NXT contract because he didn't want to spend X amount of time in developmental and didn't think that it was a product, because NXT at that time had not really proven itself. To see how the wrestling community has reflected on NXT and what he could be doing now there, I think if AJ Styles could go back, he would take that deal. So I would hope that Kurt Angle, when that time comes up, needs to do that.
I'm just saying, give Kurt Angle one more last road to WrestleMania run, then throw him down as an NXT coach. You know, that type of deal, like training the young guys. I think
yes,
right there is the perfect guy. You don't have to put him on the road. He can make his money, but he can also do something nice and keep himself in a good physical shape. That if he did that part time run like a Chris Jericho or anything, that he will. He can. He'll be able to pull that out. I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Do you think truly that Kurt Angle would let his contract with TNA be that concrete to where he could not, if something else came up, that he could not go?
No. If he was smart, he wouldn't.
I don't think he'd.
I mean, Booker T.
He's not Styles.
Both Booker T and Kevin Nash got out of their Legends contracts. Still with TNA. I think, not to go too far, and we'll deviate back to Nash. But do you remember, I'm sure some wrestling fans remember, I don't know, some will forget, and I'm going to see if you remember. Do you remember the big dispute between TNA and WWE a few years ago over Ric Flair?
Yeah.
Flair got out of his TNA contract, and TNA was so sure that it was WWE, he was going to WWE right away, that they sued WWE. And it delayed WWE from signing Flair, which something inevitably did, because probably that's exactly what the case was. Triple H wanted Flair for something. They had Flair get out of his TNA contract. They were going to sign him. TNA put a halt to that for as long as they could. And I think that awareness to that stems off of a previous issue, which is, could Kurt Angle get out of his TNA contract? Yes, because Booker T and Kevin Nash did it to be a part of the Royal Rumble. They just got out of it when WWE called them, said, do you want a Legends contract? We'll bring you into the Rumble. They both said yes. So they got out of it. So I'm sure Kurt Angle can find a way. Our last big news item, I guess, is now something Drew doesn't know. It's the Kevin Nash domestic dispute. Now, we reported on Scott Hall's unfortunate incident with his son just because it was something, a character piece that we like to talk about here on the show. But, okay, for the fans and Drew who don't know, over Christmas, the holiday break, Kevin Nash, apparently his son Tristan came home quite drunk. And there was an altercation, first verbal.
How old is his son?
In the 20s, I do believe.
Okay, so legal adult.
Yeah, legal adult, late teens, early 20s.
Legally allowed to get his ass kicked by his dad.
Yes, within reason. Well, because apparently the verbal altercation turned physical and that evening, and when Nash had to restrain his son. His son says that Nash chokeslammed him to the ground, and his son said and Nash, of course, said he just pinned his son's body. But when the cops showed up, they found Nash to be the more aggressor of the two and arrested Nash and took him in and booked him. Later that night, however, his son, they would get called back to the house by Nash's brother when his son was apparently thrown around Nash's girlfriend or his wife. Forgive me for not knowing.
Thrown around.
So the son went to jail, too. So Nash spent some time in a slammer, got posted on bail, and as of 3 p.m. today, the charges were dropped. So the incident was lifted, but there was a domestic incident with Nash, and he was and at Fonz, WWE, who had been promoting him for the Raw reunion show this Monday, pulled him from advertising and pulled him from the show. Now that the charges have been dropped, he may show up anyway.
Right.
Since it's Triple H's buddy. But
little Nash comes home drunk.
Yes.
Starts a fight with dad.
All
right.
They both end up getting arrested.
Nash still drinks, right?
Oh, yeah. He's a big wine guy.
Okay. So he's not like a recovering alcoholic, son.
No, he's the only member of the clique to have had substance experience and not go to rehab for it. Triple H doesn't do anything. But
step steroids. He did.
Easy.
Come on.
No, I don't make those accusations.
All right. He does not wink use steroids ever. He does not now. I don't believe in my heart that Triple H has used steroids in the last 5 years. All right?
I would counter that by saying very distinctly that I would not by any circumstances say live on the air that Triple H has clearly used metabolic steroids or any kind of major enhancement. I would never say that on the air. But if I did, I would say that if he did ever use them, he is still using them because he's now in a position to never be tested for them because he's a CEO or a COO or corporate.
Let's be honest. I mean, like, would anybody who consider performance enhancing drugs in most sporting now is look at guys like The Rock, okay? The Rock does not juice, okay? They're not juicing steroids. It's not anabolic steroids anymore. What do they call them? Supplements. They call them supplements, right?
Metabolic, yeah.
Metabolic supplements, but I mean, really, they're just. They're actually like over the counter testosterone.
Yes,
that is considered, you know, against the rules in MLB, you know, places like that. I would not say that the WWE has the same kind of rules for those types of substances.
What's really interesting is to go into before we go. I don't want to go too far into.
Yeah, I don't want to get.
We can have a whole episode about this, but it's really interesting, and in that episode we'll cover where the lines actually fall for what's illegal as far as steroids in the United States and where they're illegal. And the answers would surprise you. And the only reason that WWE got in trouble is because when they started this whole thing and Vince McMahon got put in trial at the end of the 92 and the 93, the definitions of steroids were a lot both broader and at the same time more specific as far as regards to specific things that they knew had been passed around on the WWE locker room. So it was a targeted coup, but it was, in fact, it's interesting. We'll cover steroids in another
episode. Yeah, I was about to say, we should probably do, you know, a lot of listeners a favor and, you know, just make that an episode one night.
We
get a lot of people... That fucking bitch Nancy Grace, you know, part of my anger here, my aggression.
I bet you.
Place people like that want to just, that's what, when they talk about wrestling, that's what they want to go after. St- steroid use in WWE. Look at these guys. They're monsters.
It's a buzzword for people who are ignorant.
But on the same hand, they're not flipping out about Mark McGwire hitting fucking 73 home runs. You know,
in fact, they love it. It's America.
Yeah. It's America. But then when he got caught, he's one of the worst guys ever, right? I'm just saying, but the first thing people talk about with baseball, football, those sports, you know what? That's like the first thing I talk about with a lot of sports. Not going to lie. But I don't.
The asterisk.
I don't nitpick. Okay?
The asterisk, yes.
I don't nitpick. I really don't care myself about the use of steroids. But what we have to do is that maybe we should take more of an unbiased side of the conversation.
I think we should. And I think we should let the people that call in and go live on our chat, like all the people we have in the chat right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll have a good episode. You know, I bet we can find a nutritionist, dude, to come on the show and literally explain some, not only the effects, but what's legal and what's not legal.
At the very least, I'm sure we can go pay a GNC guy $20.
Well, see, that's exactly what I'm saying. We're going to Vitamin World. All right. So with that said, you know what I think it's time for? Magnets! We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, it's going to be time for the Macho Madness. We're going to get into our Randy Savage tribute, share our favorite memories, the greatest memories, talk about his Hall of Fame inductions, both the long overdue aspect and the controversy. Oh, Lord, imagine that controversy when dealing with Savage, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. But we are going to take a commercial break. It's Ringside View Wrestling Podcast. Don't go away. In fact, call in. Join the guests that are right now chatting it up in the chat room. Be a part of the action. It's Ringside View, the wrestling podcast with the best seat in the house. Don't go away.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? This is Becky, and I'm here to tell you something. I am freaking awesome. Yeah, and besides that, I'm opening a beauty salon. It's gonna be freaking wicked. Yeah, wicked. I cut hair and do nails and, like, do tans and shit. So come on down.
You know it's so hot.
So you want to get, like, the coolest shit ever, hit me up on Twitter. It's at Becky Bitches.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's so hot.
Becky, awesome. All right, we're back, Ringside View, and we are talking about the Macho Man, Randy Savage, one of the greatest of all time. I mean, great worker, amazing, over-the-top personality, unique promos that everybody, I mean, God, we have impersonated him 100 times so far in the episode, and we're going to keep doing it, brother, because we're in a danger zone.
All right, so I have to say, all right, and this is me getting a little serious on the topic, that Macho Man, I mean, out of all the legends that I can remember watching, you know, and all of those guys, Macho Man is always the one that sticks in my mind the most. You know, back in the day, you know, watching him come down the ring as the Macho King against, you know, numerous opponents. I mean, let's go with WrestleMania 5 is my fondest memory, but, you know, that's Macho Man. You know, the man of Macho Man is a very debatable issue about who people think he really was, what he was really all about. But, I mean, as far as what I knew, what I saw on TV, class act.
Classy guy.
Class guy.
Absolutely. I mean, Randy Savage, the person, was renowned in wrestling business for his charity. And he's a very intense person by all accounts. And what you see on TV was a lot of what you got in real life. Very larger-than-life personality. One of the last things that he was known to do was some charitable acts in the Tampa area. So, good, solid guy. But we're talking about the legacy, the times, the Macho Man. But before we get into our memories, because that's what I really want to sink our teeth into, let's just call out the big red and yellow bandana-wearing elephant in the room. Now, folks, I'm going to lead into this, then we're going to get Drew's thoughts, and we want to hear your thoughts, too. Hulk Hogan has been announced as the guy who will be inducting Randy Savage into the Hall of Fame. Now, the first question someone would have is why not his brother, Lanny Poffo, the genius. because most likely Lanny Poffo will be accepting the award for Macho Man, so that qualifies him right out of the gate. Then after that, there's a list of
Lanny
people.
Poffo is his brother?
Yes.
Okay.
The genius.
Right.
There's a list of people that you would automatically assume that then they would go to. Since Miss Elizabeth is no longer with us, then you go down, perhaps Ricky Steamboat, which is probably Savage's most known match. You go with some of the people who are renowned as Savage's closest interesting friends in wrestling, such as Bret the Hitman Hart. But the one person that you would traditionally, being an internet wrestling fan, not consider would be Hulk Hogan. Because mostly of the long-standing, intense personal rivalry that we would believe to have. Now, Hogan and WWE will lead you to believe that it was patched up over time and it was nothing, but that thing, from what we understand, was indeed patched up, but it was near the end. And for a long time, I mean, dude, the beef was so real, at least on Savage's end, which is, in this issue, the end that's important, that he created an entire rap album to diss Hulk Hogan.
He challenged Hulk Hogan to a real fight.
Real fight.
A real fight in the wrestling ring. And it was only like, a couple years before he passed.
No, that's like 2005, 2006.
What year did he die?
2012? Yeah, 11.
That feels like so long ago. Oh, it doesn't fly in the way that you think it does.
2011, maybe? Yeah.
But challenged him to a real fight, a fist fight, because he wanted to punch Hogan's face in so bad, and he was going to give all the money it made to charity. And this is the beef that he had. But go ahead, Mel.
Before I get into that, yeah. So let me finish my thought on this. So to catch up on anything, Hogan at one time even went to Savage's father to try to smooth things out with Savage. Savage wasn't really interested in it. He thought it was he even rapped about it in his album that he thought it was a pussy move, as Savage would, nonchalantly call it. So those are the facts, as what I to understand. And my opinion on it is, listen, for the personal Macho Man, his brother's going to be the one accepting this award. And there'll be a lot of guys there telling great stories about him the night that he's inducted. And he will rightfully be, officially, there is no asterisk on Macho Man after WrestleMania, where he will just be recognized as one of the greatest of all time, period. To be a formal member of that Hall of Fame is long overdue. To have Hogan interrupted is not for us, the internet wrestling fans. It's for the casual fans, the guys that birth the mega powers. So remember the 80s, the people that, when they refer to wrestling, and there's still so many people out there, they don't think of Steve Austin, they don't think of John Cena, they don't think of Daniel Bryan, they think of Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage. Those two exact personalities. So it's for those people to see. And I'm interested now, because not only because of the reaction, but just the history. You know, Hogan's going to go out there, and he's going to Hogan it up, and he's going to really, make himself look as good as he can. But I imagine there's going to be a degree of honesty to Hogan in that speech that we will not have seen before and under certain circumstances. So my opinion is, hey, it makes news. I have no real issue with it other than the grounds that there is no other blaringly obvious candidate to introduce him. There is no blaringly obvious candidate, so why not go with the most notable one?
I mean, do you really want me to start listening?
Well, I have said my piece. So, Drew, how do you feel?
I mean, Hulk Hogan, I mean, you nailed it right on the head as in why he shouldn't do it. But the thing is, if Savage was still alive and they were inducted into the Hall of Fame, Hogan would not be anywhere near that podium, okay? If he did, it's because him and Savage patched things up, all right?
Yeah.
Now, assuming that Savage was still alive and assuming that nothing changed between him and Hogan, he'll not be near that podium. I would question whether Macho Man would even be inducted. But if he were inducted, circumstances would be the same, but Savage was alive, there's no way. This is a slap to Randy Savage's face in the grave, in my opinion. All right, now, what will save face for me come that day will be Hulk Hogan showing up to go ahead and induct Macho Man. Now, he's not accepting for him, right?
No.
He's just inducting.
Lanny probably will do that.
Okay, so Hogan shows up and inducts, I would feel better as a person who is a fan of Macho Man, more so than a fan of Hogan. You know, I would probably feel better about it if Hogan got up there and was a little more brutally honest. Maybe not in the sense of saying, you know, the Macho Man was like an asshole, but if he goes, you know, we had our differences. You know, I maybe wasn't the best of friends to Macho Man, but, you know, there's not a day that goes by where I don't regret that. And I'm sure he's going to say things like that, right? At least he should.
Yeah.
You know,
would that make you more comfortable?
That would make me a little more better listening to the induction. But up until then, up until I hear those words come out of his mouth, I'm not with it. I don't think it should happen. Because, I mean, honestly, I could probably name a couple people that are probably better suited to go ahead and induct Macho Man Randy Savage. I mean, need I say that, you know, who's all still alive? You know,
well, yeah, I mean, that's my argument for the pro, and that's what's in my mind.
It's Sting.
No, I mean, when you think of Savage, you think of Sting. Sting's way down the line. I would say even Flair. For my first pick, I would say Bret Hart.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Well, no, that's just because he's his greatest rival. I'd say Flair before it, because Flair knew Savage a little bit, at least a little bit more vibrantly. They were notable, not fans of each other for a long time.
Vince McMahon.
Again, too. Vince refuses to induct anybody into the Hall of Fame, but didn't he induct somebody just recently? The Ultimate War? No.
No. He did induct somebody.
Who knows? Well,
I can't remember.
Fans correct us if we can't remember. We'll come back to that. But, yes, so you're not a fan. But that's controversy, fans, so we want you to, you know, join in the chat, is lighting up about this. Join the action. Call in if you have any comments to say about it. Inside view, I want to go into Savage memories right now.
All right.
Let's start at the beginning, right? My first memories of Savage, or the thing I think about in earliest memories in his career that I have, is his introduction in the WWE, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, Drew, and for the fans that aren't as into that history, they ran a great idea where Savage was this larger-than-life, almost like the next top draft pick, the hottest free agent in wrestling is what they call him. Because they had all these heel. Sorry, technical difficulties. Melvin, that's a black mark against you, dude. Coming in and drop kicking stuff. Sit down. Anyway,
good one.
So they had all the heel managers, the Grand Wizard, Freddie Blassie, Lou Albano, all vying each week while Savage was out to try to get him to be their new client because, you know, the sky was the limit for the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And they finally, and it's a build up in here in his debut, that he's going to unveil his new manager, but it's none of the guys that it was viewing for, vying for. Bobby Heenan was among them. But rather, his new manager, Miss Elizabeth, was bam, right flat out, she became the hottest female valet in wrestling at that time. So,
yes.
And there on in, it was all straight success. Savage, she would soon capture the Intercontinental title from Tito Santana. And then really the first big Savage match, the first big, huge card on Savage's career was WrestleMania II against George Steele. Imagine that when you talk about Savage, who's known for his over-the-top personality, and in-ring acumen, that his first match is against somebody who is an over-the-top personality. It's a blueprint for him last night.
So when did he actually become the Macho King?
The Macho King was later in his career, post-WrestleMania 5.
I thought he was king when 3 happened.
No.
No?
He's not king. He's king after WrestleMania 5.
I think he had a very elaborate entrance.
He definitely did. He was carried by people into the ring on a throne.
Yeah.
But was different for it. Let's go back. So WrestleMania 2, Steel, you know, interesting match, retains the Intercontinental Championship. Of course, that leads us into God. The first of many Hallmark matches, but really the Hallmark Intercontinental title match. WrestleMania 3, Savage Steamboat.
Now, dude, that's like top 5 match of all time.
This is when you really start getting into good Savage shit, dude, because the build-up to that, he crushes Steamboat's windpipe with the bell.
Right.
Yeah, crushes it with the bell. So and they always sold the elbow drop as being across the throat. So, bam, Savage's finish softens him up. Steamboat comes back in January, and WrestleMania is set up. And then the match happens.
I mean, if you love wrestling matches, okay?
Yes.
If you love just straight beginning to end wrestling matches, then, I mean, the two matches that you need to watch first and foremost are the Iron Man match, but most importantly, Savage versus Steamboat. I mean, they did everything. WrestleMania 3. Remember, main event of WrestleMania 3, listeners. Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. Okay? Mm-hmm. Pretty much the epitome of what wrestling in that day was.
Yes.
Right?
That is the epitome
of
what
wrestling was. Up until that point, that's what it was. Okay? Things started changing a little after this point. Because WrestleMania 3 is a book card, and a lot of young blood starting to come into the show. And fours were really starting to kick off. But how many times each one of those guys went to the top rope, used the turnbuckles, you know, things that you really didn't see a whole lot of, high-flying maneuvers, you know, cross-body blocks. Who was doing cross-body blocks besides tag team young guys?
I mean, really, yeah, just your tag team bumpers. Yeah.
That match was, like, full of that. Nobody, and, you know, before that point, I'm sure people were sitting there thinking, nobody's going to want to see people flying around the ring at each other for 30 minutes.
Well, I think nobody was really quite sure what to expect, because here you have what was clearly a heavyweight wrestler match, but was clearly not going to be wrestled like such.
No.
Really have an expectation, but that was the only really inkling you have going in that.
When you compared Randy Savage and Steamboat to the guys who were in the ring with them at that time, a lot of people dwarfed them. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's the thing. If you took that Savage and that Steamboat and put them in a ring with a lot of the guys today, they would dwarf a lot of the roster today. So, like, when you think about it that way, it's like John Cena and Randy Orton going 30 minutes, but what they're doing is not ground wrestling and power moves. They're cross-bodying each other from the top rope and, you know, just pinfall after pinfall, and nobody wanting to, everybody kicking out, nobody wanting to stay down. It was just just 5 stars. Yeah. That match is a 5-star match. There's not very many high-profile 5-star matches, but that's definitely one of them.
It's interesting that you mentioned kicking out and such, because if I could have your attention, dear listeners, especially those of you that are new to sports entertainment or have grown up in the post-2000s era of wrestling, you maybe you've gone back and watched that match, and maybe you say to yourself, I don't know what the big deal is. Because you've grown up now knowing what 90s wrestling was and the high excitement in the ring that brought and how that's never really come down that fast pace. And you've seen the technical classic matches of guys like Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, even John Cena, Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker. So going back and watching a match from WrestleMania 3, in a match that is even so lauded and so built up, may strike you as old or boring or slow. But I'm here to tell you why that match is excruciatingly important to all the wrestling that you ever watch from this moment forward. And it is for two reasons. WrestleMania 3 versus Savage, versus Steamboat for the Intercontinental title is important in the annals of wrestling history for two reasons. Number one, because it established the true nature of the Intercontinental title. After that, it became the secondary title that was on par with the WCW over the NWA United States Championship or secondary tag title that was regarded at that time. It made it that match is symbolic for the workhorse nature that would the Intercontinental title would become regarded for years to come. And what all those grumpy old guys complain about that we all talk about, that the Intercontinental title has lost its prestige, we need to get back to the glory. That match is the reason why that thing had a glory in the first place.
Honestly, if I could really just go ahead and say that there are two matches in my mind that really dignify and speak the volumes about what the Intercontinental title was about, not to kind of taper off and just state my mindset on that, was that match,
Savage Steamboat.
And obviously the ladder match between Ramon and Shawn Michaels. And
those got to be your two.
Those are your two. This is what the Intercontinental Title stands for. And when people say that now, you're right. Those are the examples that they think about. I mean, I know when I think about IC title, that's the match I think about.
Absolutely.
You know, those two matches, definitely. And that brings up a good point about that. You know, that brings up, like, how many bars that Macho Man set. As many bars he set as a standard for people, you know, that maybe even more than what the guys like Hogan and your
yeah.
and you know, your Stone Colds, everybody like that. You know, Macho Man and Steamboat, especially in that match, not only set the standard for what the IC title was, not only set the prestige for what the IC title was, but they set the standard for how a match should be paced and should have been paced.
It really, influenced it.
It's like you don't get bored in that match one second.
Well, that brings me to my second point.
Even when they don't move.
The second reason why that match, and it's even more somehow important than the Intercontinental title concept, is that match was the first major WWE match, WWF, on a major show to have that near drama, trading fall after fall, wondering which one is going to be the winning show. And I introduced that concept that broke. It's like a storytelling device in books or movies. The minute they figure it out, nothing's ever the same because now they know that that works. But the indelible mark of the first time that they do it, the impact the Wizard of Oz or Singing in the Rain had on film, music, the electric guitar, right? The near fall finish that would become the staple, not only of that Intercontinental, but what we could consider a great in-ring professional wrestling match that they do today to no end, the near fall finish, you know, 10 near falls before the damn match ends. Traces back in that vein exactly to Savage versus Steamboat WrestleMania 3.
Up until that point, you had people maybe 4 or 5 pinfalls a match, and you know 3 of them were near falls, right? You know, and they meant a lot, you know. But with that match, do you remember the number? How many?
Falls.
It was like,
no,
it was like something like outrageous,
like
25, 30.
No, it was like 7 or 8.
I don't know, man.
But what happened in the end? Yeah, in the end. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the last go home stretch.
I'm talking about a whole match, you know, whole matches. Because, like, that match as a whole, how many pinfalls just went into that? And then at the end, and they've been trying to keep each other down for so long, and at the end, where they just went.
You know,
back and forth.
They did it, and the match ends with a small package. So, there you go. So, WrestleMania 3, God, if you haven't seen it, get your ass to the WWE Network or YouTube and just watch it. God, what are you doing with your life if you are listening to this show and you haven't seen WrestleMania 3, Savage versus Steamboat? Do something with yourself.
For only $9.99. You can go watch that stuff.
So, after that, Savage turns babyface because they saw the money in him. Feuds with the Honky Tonk Man, who takes the Intercontinental title off of him. He would win it back from Steamboat.
Right.
Honky Tonk Man would win it from Steamboat, and Savage would feud. I'm fuzzy on the details right now. I'm sorry. I'm so Savage overloaded. But it would lead him into the WrestleMania 4 World Championship Tournament, where he would go on, wrestle 4 times, 4 times at WrestleMania 4 to beat Ted DiBiase, and win the WWF Championship. And one would be remiss to not mention that Hogan found his way into that match, helped Savage win the belt. But bam, the seed is planted. Savage beats Ted DiBiase to win his first WWF Championship. Drew.
I mean, what else? It was the right call.
Absolutely. He's
absolutely.
Call.
I mean,
without him, Hogan win it.
4 freaking victories.
Hogan had no film, no holds barred. This is the true fact. And they needed somebody else to cover. Ultimate Warrior wasn't ready yet. It wasn't even really a thought. They had just started him. Ultimate Warrior was in the tournament. So they haven't really gotten to him yet. He would win the belt at that SummerSlam, followed the Intercontinental title.
Savage
was the only
one. A lot of momentum going into that.
That kind of it was not an option to have a heel win the main event at WrestleMania. So Savage was the call. They went with him. With Hogan was formed. Good match with DiBiase,
right,
by the way. Good match with DiBiase. Awesome hand, especially in ring. But that set the stage. They would team at SummerSlam that year to fight DiBiase and Andre the Giant with Jesse Ventura as the special referee. And immediately after that, things would fall apart.
Did you just say referee?
Referee. And then the Mega Powers, as they were known, Hogan and Savage. Mega Powers thoughts real quick before we talk about what comes up?
I mean, we're going to delve into this. I mean, because really, what this is the storyline that really just, you know, that it showed a different side of Hogan, and showed a different side of, you know, Macho Man.
Oh,
you
know, that was turned it up.
You already were starting to try to figure out what to expect from Savage. There was nothing to expect. You never knew what you were going to get from him. He was so, like, unconventional at the, you know, at the time. And what would be considered a standard lad now was, like we said, set that bar. And then you'd get every night with something new. And the guy was coming up with something new. And wore that fucking beard, you know, that just made him look so badass, too. And it's, you wouldn't expect somebody like that to do what he did. And for him and Hogan, the pinnacle of wrestling, teaming up with that guy, all right? For Savage, what a push, right?
What a rub.
What a rub. For Hogan, you know, very wise. And
it wasn't a make-or-break situation, Hogan, but it was the smartest thing to do, and it paid off. I mean, so the mega powers collide.
It was
and
the first time, and when they collided, it was the first time you got a chance to question the person of Hulk Hogan.
I mean, absolutely. That was and when you go back and watch it in retrospect, Jesse Ventura really lays the groundwork for that exact perspective, because he talks about Hogan trying to weasel himself between Savage and Elizabeth, and how what Hogan is doing is not right. And true fact, I mean, WrestleMania 5 is monumentous in its own right for being, I think, three things. One, I'll fire it off real quick. One, when you think about the epitome of 80s wrestling, Hulk Hogan versus Macho Man Randy Savage is the epitome of WWF 80s wrestling. So having a WrestleMania 5, bam, there's your match of those two characters and that generation. Two,
1990.
No, it was 1989. 87, 8.
Yeah, you're right.
All right,
sorry.
Yeah. So, Savage and Hogan, number two, it's the first time Hogan went into WrestleMania in a big card like that as the challenger for a WWF championship. So now you were rooting against the underdog to win, for the underdog to win the belt. And it was the first time that it would happen like that. That the underdog, Hulk Hogan.
You thought Hogan was the underdog?
No, but I mean, he's the challenger, so now you're rooting for Hogan to win. You're rooting for a title change in a Hogan match at WrestleMania, is essentially the first time that ever happened, right?
So I was the only one rooting against Hogan?
Probably.
I mean, at the time, I was a year old, okay? So for me to tell you, I actually remember that happening in front of me at the time. No, but I've seen that match so many damn times that to sit there and watch the build-up for that match so many damn times, that
you're saying so many damn times.
But I watched that build up for that match, and I never, ever, ever, ever wanted Hogan to win that match. Not in a million years. I mean, because when you go into that match, let's lay it out for you real quick, that going into that match, Savage and Hogan had already gathered some tension.
Yeah.
Right? And then there came the story of Miss Elizabeth. I kind of fuzzy on the details.
That was the split.
I mean, you know, Savage thought Hogan wanted Elizabeth, and, you know, probably did.
It was funny because she would come out with Hogan for a little bit after WrestleMania.
She did not help the case at all. But going into that night, you're thinking, Hogan is trying to steal this man's woman. That's what I was thinking. Why would I root for that guy? And I think it was the first time in my mind that I didn't root for Hogan.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? And that was like, I didn't want him to win. But he was the John Cena, man. You know, John Cena's the Hogan, man. It was like, you knew he was going to win the match.
Okay, so to say something about the Hogan thing, first of all, the third reason why that match is monumentous for that exact reason is that that match exists in main Macho Man, a main event guy, period. He's a star, main event guy. If something happened to Savage and he doesn't make it to that match, he wins the title at WrestleMania 4, she's not quite on her level because he didn't work Hogan in the 80s, and Savage did. So that made Savage a star. Now, that match there is, I feel it's the best, up until that point, it's the best one-on-one WrestleMania main event that they had. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It was a better match than Savage DiBiase. It was a better match than Hogan Andre. And it was a better match than Bundy and Hogan. So it was your first, it was your best at up to that time in ring wrestling match. But really, when you think about blueprint Hogan matches, if like you can make a Hogan match go as good as it can go, it's WrestleMania 5, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that is, but I mean, Hogan has never been known for his spectacular in-ring abilities.
I mean, that match is the blueprint. I mean, Hogan stumbled, Hogan danced around the blueprint until he found that Savage match, which is Hogan gets, he's on fire when he comes in, chases the heel around, does some damage to the heel, heel catches him on the side, cheats, rolls him in, works him, Hogan starts to make his fire, heel cuts him off, heel drops him with the finish, Hogan kicks out, hulks up, three punches, a big boot, a leg drop, and we got a new champion. Right? Yep. That would happen almost every other goddamn time after that goddamn match. You know, it's awesome, and it works, and it's Hulkamania, dude. And Hulkamania is back on top, but that's, if you hate Hulk Hogan matches, the blueprint one is WrestleMania 5.
Yeah, but, you know, if you love wrestling matches, then that match is the greatest match to watch.
Look at it like this, too. Savage is the first heel to walk in the WrestleMania as the champion. You know, something that Jericho would do and Triple H would do and years after him and The Rock would do. Savage was the first guy to walk into WrestleMania as champion and as the heel. So think about that. And it happened at WrestleMania 5. Now, shortly after that, this is where Drew's memory would kick in. For this moment, Savage would become, split it off with Elizabeth permanently and become the Macho King, Randy Savage, getting Queen Sensational Sherry Martel, as his manager. His next memorable feud would go to a WrestleMania match, a mixed tag match with the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, baby, if you will. What you gotta understand about Dusty Rhodes is he walking, he is talking, he is every man, he is every dream, and one day he hopes to aspire, baby, to be on the level of the Nature Boy Ric Flair, if you will. So then that leads me into what I really want to get to, which is my favorite Macho Man Randy Savage match. The retirement match at WrestleMania 7 with the Ultimate Warrior. Two guys have now lost us. And I keep teasing that we're going to do a show about WrestleMania 7 and the fact that you might be doomed if you're on that show.
That match still pisses me off.
But, wow, God, dude, man, he pulled a hell of a thing out of the Warrior in that match. That match, still, to this day, I'll admit it, I'm a grown-ass fan, wrestling fan life. If I start watching WrestleMania 7, I can't stop. And if I get to the end, in that segment with Elizabeth at the end of that match, I cry.
It's sad. It's the first time, to my knowledge, that they ever did that.
No, absolutely, man. They pulled the heartstrings.
And I mean, like it was, and I mean, like to have a match like that,
retirement match,
on a stage like that.
Yes.
And you never heard of such things. And I do remember that match very vividly. Like as a young child watching that match, I remember watching that with you, and I remember thinking, there's no way Macho Man's going to lose this match, right?
Well, yeah,
but at the same time, I mean,
the concept of a retirement match to us at that time was kind of inconceivable.
How could there not be an Ultimate Warrior, though?
Yeah.
You know, this is going through my mind. I'm a young kid, face paint, sweet, but Macho Man, ooh, yeah.
Elbow drop.
He flies in the air like an angel. You know, like, he's the reason the dinosaurs are extinct. let's be real. That elbow drop could save worlds and end worlds in the same drop. But that's not the point here. The point here is that match happened. And
amazing match as it was.
And Macho Man, beginning to end, an Ultimate Warrior, rest in peace, God bless, whatever you believe in, Ultimate Warrior, in my opinion, was never a great performer. All right, was never a worker. He had a heart of fucking gold, though. You know what I mean? That guy. People might think of him as like this kind of crazy, you know, dickhead. But you know, he really
and
wasn't.
They might be right.
And they might be right. He was a little dickish sometimes, and you know, God rest his soul. But at the same time, The guy really was a good guy. And I think a lot of people get lost in that. The dude really, you know, and he admittedly used steroids at one point in his career. And aside from that, you know, like, he really didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't a drug user.
I mean, just a bad negotiator.
Yeah, just a bad negotiator. I mean, it really came down to he let his emotions get the best of him in the wrong moments. Yeah, his pride really was. And you know, Linda McMahon said it in her induction speech. You know what I mean? That he that he ever needed to bitch, he was calling Linda. Linda was the one number he had on speed dial. You know, just and it was. And, but that's beside the point. Talking about Macho Man, I'm getting off track. Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior. Macho Man just knew, and this is why Macho Man, you know, more so than you know probably Fred Hart. And I know you might disagree with me on this one, but just like HBK. And this is why I think HBK is, you know, the greatest of all time. Just like HBK, those guys knew how to make the worst wrestlers look phenomenal. And Bret Hart did it. I'm just saying that they both did it better than even Bret did.
Now, yes, I love Bret Hart and his in-ring ability. But I would say that there are three wrestlers throughout human history that there was never had an uninteresting match, period. Three wrestlers in that throughout human history that never had an uninteresting match, and Bret Hart is not on that list. Randy Savage is Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I mean,
it didn't matter. Bret Hart was amazing, but Bret Hart versus Skinner was not a very interesting
that's
match.
That's one of the ones that comes
to
my mind.
But there's never a match I can remember with Randy. I watched.
We have a match with Hillbilly Jim one time, Bret Hart. Is that Hillbilly Jim? Who's the guy?
Henry Godwin.
Yeah, Henry Godwin. That was terrible.
No, Skinner is what you're talking about.
Skinner, yeah.
But he is wrestling.
That's exactly the one I'm thinking about. Yep. That was a very boring match. It's so boring, it sticks in my brain.
Yes. But you know Savage. Right? WrestleMania 7. Now, folks, if I could just tell you why I love.
I just want to finish my thought.
Oh, yes, please finish your thought.
But the fact that Savage brought the best out in the Warrior. Had the motherfucker down, you know, not once, not twice, but three times. It goes for three elbows.
He hits five elbows.
He hit five. Oh, and I lost count because he hits five elbows and the Warrior gets up. And it was just that perfect, like, you never seen anybody kick out of, like, a real finisher like that at that point, like that many times. Puts the Warrior down. He got greedy. He went for more. Puts him down, and the Warrior gets up and beats him. And then there's just that real moment, that first real moment in wrestling history where Savage and is just, I'm out of a job. I'm going to have to retire. And Elizabeth gets in the ring, and she starts crying.
No, see, you're cutting out all the good parts, Drew, with your shoddy memory.
I'm paraphrasing.
No.
We got 17 minutes.
Who gives a shit? We're talking about WrestleMania 7. First of all, yes, Savage drops him with an unbelievable five elbow drops. Does it like everyone's like, this is it. He does it. He puts him away. Warrior kicks out. Savage goes for another and gets moved. Now, the Warrior also does a spot where he drops Savage, and Savage won't stay down. And Warrior gives up and starts to waltz away, but he comes back into the ring. He catches Savage. Like the finish comes with a spot where Warrior keeps knocking Savage out, but he knocks him literally out of the ring. And he rolls him in, and Savage is still on his feet, just out on his feet, and Warrior can't keep him down. And he catches him before he can roll out again, puts one foot on him, and beats him. Now, Sherry, Sensational Sherry, is Savage's manager at this time. Warrior leaves. Celebrates. Doesn't give us a sign of respect that kayfabe will never be broken like that at that time.
Yeah, you're right.
So Savage is just starting to get up.
The best part.
Yeah, and Sherry is just... Now, they show Elizabeth in the crowd earlier. Like, she's going to be there for possibly Savage's last match. And they interview her, and she's just there to watch, just there to be part of WrestleMania. Well, Sherry gets a drink, and she's pissed that Savage lost. She put all her stock in this horse, and he is done. So she starts kicking the shit out of the Macho Man Randy Savage, just beating the shit out of him. And he's down, he's beat up, he just got lost his career, and Sherry's beating him up. Well, this brings Elizabeth, hops the barricade, runs down the aisle, slides in the ring, and whoops Sherry's ass. And Sherry is bails out to the ring, cuts on Elizabeth. And Elizabeth goes to check on the Macho Man, but the Macho Man doesn't know what happens, and he thinks maybe it was Elizabeth who attacks him. Then they make eye contact, and he looks around, and Elizabeth is crying. And he looks around in the crowd, and in that moment, they embrace. And, oh, God, dude, I got this. I'm talking about it. Yeah, everything is right in the freaking universe. Everyone's crying. He puts Macho Man, and he rides off into the sunset with Elizabeth. God damn it, dude. That's awesome. That's what wrestling is right there. That's when you think of all the soap opera aspects of wrestling, everything that they want to achieve is that freaking moment.
Absolutely. What a storyline is about. Unfortunately, that storyline has been overplayed.
Yes.
Quite a few times at this point.
But at that moment there, it was organic.
But you really want to know why they have retirement matches or why they have matches where the careers are on the line and the impact that those are supposed to make when somebody loses.
Or that.
That's what they try to recreate every time they do it.
Absolutely. And
you know what? Everybody then, and you got to realize, like, yeah, people called it fake too then. A lot of people call it fake too then, and it's not that, it's that, but at that time, that was so real to everybody who watched that. You could not convince anybody that he did not retire at that point. It wasn't until he showed up on WCW, or he showed up again in WWE.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dude. He won the championship at the next WrestleMania.
What was the out to get him back in?
Jake the Snake Roberts with a Cobra. You remember the Cobra angle? Where Jake was on the dark side, and he ended up biting Randy Savage in the arm of the Cobra, and that brought Savage back. And their feud would culminate on the WrestleMania, where Savage would eventually beat at WrestleMania 8 next year Flair for the World Championship in a feud over Elizabeth. Then Savage would be on commentary for WrestleMania 9 at Caesar's Palace.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was that after Flair won the Rumble for the title? Is that the right after?
Yes. That is the WrestleMania right after.
Speaking of which, Royal Rumble. Just what?
Coming up.
Week and a half away.
Yeah, we have to do our picks before we go off the air.
We do.
Yes.
I don't think my
I'm just summarizing the rest of Savage's career and any great moments that stick out. So he won the title, would drop it to Flair again, who would eventually lose it to Bret Hart. So he's on commentary at WrestleMania 9. He's back in action at WrestleMania 10, the infamous card with the Owen Bret match and the ladder match, where he wrestled Crush in the first Last Man Standing match. So he would be crushed. WWE Last Man Standing match.
I forgot about that match, honestly.
Yeah, it's a forgotten match at WrestleMania 10.
Yeah, I mean,
it really happened.
If you really don't think about it too much, but that didn't he handcuff?
He would tie his feet. He would hog tie his feet,
yeah.
Hang him upside down. Just Crush couldn't answer the stand on his feet. Was kind of tense. I think he had to be back in the ring. I think he had 10 seconds back in the ring or something along those lines. But Savage would leave for WCW soon after, where he would win the WCW World Championship a couple of times, become a keystone member of the NWO's run, split off. He'd be a member of the Wolfpack, and he would wrestle for WCW. It would be his last major promotion that he would effort. He would wrestle for TNA, actually, show up twice, wrestle once for TNA, where he would beat Jeff Jarrett in a six-man tag match. And then Savage would stay quiet for years. He would release a rap album. Ton and Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much one of my favorite YouTube videos to watch is what
Faded Out.
Savage challenging Hogan to a fist fight.
Yes. He was very serious about that, folks. You owe it to yourself. We're going to post on our Facebook some Savage clips for you to get yourself a hold of this week. But really, I mean, so now Savage. Well, he passed away, unfortunately, of a heart failure during behind the wheel of a car. And, I mean, wow, it was devastating wrestling loss, really. And I think for me, we'll get to your thoughts here in 1 second, Drew, but for me, when I heard about Savage, it was like Macho Man was out of the limelight, but he was still always in your heart. And when it hit and it sunk in that Randy Savage was gone, I mean, you really think about, God, man, what a true figure in the wrestling business. So what a loss. But now, finally, going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Drew, what's your feelings on the loss of Savage?
I mean, it was heartbreaking. It was one of those things where, you know, your childhood right there. You know, your early childhood for me. For some people, that was their teen years. That was their Stone Cold, their Rock. You know, that was their whatever they want to call it. But to me, like, when Savage passed, I'm like, oh, man. The guy was younger than Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could have done it again. The guy was in some shape. He was built like a rock, you know, but, you know, he
he's tossed somebody over the top rope.
Heart failure, man. I mean, the guy had some shaky, you know, lifestyles that, from what you read about, what you hear about. But, I mean, to me, like, it was just losing another great legend, you know?
Losing a great one.
And then, yeah, at least we got to see, you know, and you know, at least, you know, somebody like Savage would be happy to see the Ultimate Warrior actually be able to go to his induction speech and give that speech. Guys like that Savage was probably good friends with, you know? And if Warrior was still alive, that'd be the guy I'd pick.
That's a different perspective on it.
But I think we're about at that time. We avoided the TNA rant.
We did. Well, we got time.
I hate Dixie Carter. All right, I have mad respect for anybody who works for her because it takes a lot of patience to deal with that. But at the same time, like, what that woman is doing and bitching about how she's getting rid of all these veterans because their time was yesterday. You know what, bitch? Your time was yesterday, all right? You don't know a goddamn thing about wrestling. You do not think you know about wrestling. Don't try to, you know, insult me and make me think that she knows more about wrestling than I do. Maybe she knows more about the way the business works, okay? All right, right now, Apocalypse Nana is in the room, and she's talking during our show. I don't care. I can't.
Okay.
On air, you are on my show. But what I'm saying about Dixie Carter is her big stars of yesterday, she's still leaving. She's stupid. Let's keep it at that. I don't care about burying myself with Dixie Carter because she ain't going to get any work past TNA. So fuck her. All right.
There's your TNA. TNA rant of the week. We enjoy bringing you the Macho Man episode. Before we go, we got to make the on the road to Royal Rumble. Last week, we both picked Daniel Bryan, I do believe, was our pick for winner of the Royal Rumble. Oh, you picked Roman Reigns. I picked Daniel Bryan. So
I picked Daniel Bryan.
You know, we both picked Daniel Bryan then. So we're going to get our picks this week. What, any change? Are you still going with Bryan? Or?
Ooh, no. Daniel Bryan all the way.
Okay. Interesting. I am going to stick with Daniel Bryan as well. We'll see if any drama actually unfolds as the week goes in. But I think that's going to wrap us up here for this week. Thank you for enjoying the Macho Madness. We'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, you can check out the website. Drew, what is that address?
www.
Nobody does the www. Anymore, Drew.
www. All right, you're right. HTTPS.
Ringsideviewwrestling.com.
Ringsideviewwrestling.com.
Throwing to you is ridiculous. So, Ringside View, like us on Facebook. You know, but we know that you listen to the show. We know you tell all your friends. You're awesome. Tell more friends. We expect of you. God, what are you doing with your time? And like us on Facebook. Comment. Call into the show because we like you. Maybe we'll let you join us. For the love of Lord. There you go. So, for Drew, Drew.
Drew.
There you go. We are Ringside View, the wrestling podcast with the best seat in the house. March 7th, Castle Santa, PA, GPW, live pro wrestling, generations of pro wrestling, wrestling's past, present, and future, all on one roof. It's going to be a great show. $15. Be a part of it. Bring your kids. It's going to be awesome. Anything else, Drew?
Ooh, yeah! Snap, new jib! Did it!